Immerse yourself in the lives of the BYU Cougars. This is Deep Blue.
This is Deep Blue with Jason Shepherd.
Thanks for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths. My guest is former BYU football great, NFL veteran, and General Authority Emeritus, Elder S. Gifford Nielsen. Elder Nielsen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Jason, it's nice to be with you. What a treat.
Oh, well, it is a treat for me, certainly. And there are so many different things, so many different storylines that we can dive into with you. But I wanted to start with this. People hear General Authority Emeritus. When they hear that, what does emeritus status mean as a general authority?
Before I answer that question, I just want to wish our dear prophet a happy birthday. You know, we all are just marveling at him being 101 years of age right now, and just to see the wisdom and the love and the caring way about him, it is a total privilege to serve under the leadership of President Russell M. Nelson. The Lord has prepared him for this time. He continues to sustain him, and President Nelson continues to help us evaluate the situations we are in our lives to find joy. Yeah, I think his favorite word is joy. He's never said that, but he's always talking about joy. How do you find joy in this life? And so when I think about President Nelson, I'll always remember many things, but joy is one of them. And how do you find joy? And I think that's the hallmark of what he's trying to do. And you find joy through Jesus Christ.
Absolutely.
And
well said.
And his restored gospel. So an emeritus status is kind of interesting because not a whole lot of people know that. You're called as a general authority for a period of time, a season, until you reach 70. In the year that you turn 70, you go emeritus status. And what emeritus status means is you're no longer a regular general authority with regular assignments, but you still can receive assignments from the first presidency and the Quorum of the 12. If they see a need and they have something that they would like you to do, they'll have you do it. I went emeritus with Elder Paul Johnson, who became the general Sunday school president. So I said to Elder Johnson, I said, Paul, 5 more years of teaching the gospel. He said, that's what we do.
Okay. Right.
And Elder Brent Nielsen is the chairman of the Salt Lake Salt Lake Temple Rededication Committee. And so there are assignments that we're given, and we can still have these assignments, but it's not full-time anymore. We're not doing state conferences. We're not doing mission tours, temple reviews, and different things like that, or president of an area. So my last assignment was the president of the Africa West area, which was a really remarkable assignment. We don't have those everyday assignments, mm-hmm. but we're still traveling around and building the kingdom wherever we can.
What type of testimony builder? And I think there are a lot of people that was, well, I mean, testimony's got to be strong enough if you're going to be a general authority. But I have to imagine your testimony probably deepened being able to be in those types of situations and to be able to serve in those capacities.
Let me say this about testimonies, because one of the things we do is we carry out the work of the Lord through his prophets, seers, and revelators. So we actually do the work of the first presidency and the Quorum of the 12. It's pretty much spelled out in Doctrine and Covenants, section 107, what a 70 does. And so we carry out that work for them. And to be able to rub shoulders with them has been one of the tremendous blessings of both Wendy and me in our lives, to be able to prepare to have and receive them in an area, to be able to teach with them and work with them. I can tell you this, that I know that we have prophets, seers, and revelators on the earth today. And it is a privilege and an honor to be able to serve with them shoulder to shoulder and carry out the work of the Lord in this historic time of gathering scattered Israel. I think you can see it. We definitely can see a momentum here with BYU athletics, but I see it in a little bit different way. I see momentum building throughout the world as people want to find joy, mm-hmm. they want to find peace, they want to find purpose in life. And so when you explain the restored gospel of Jesus Christ to them, especially in West Africa, our last assignment, it just made a whole lot of sense to our African brothers and sisters. Wow, there is a plan. We're not just here working day to day, there is a plan for us, and it's an eternal plan. It's an eternal journey, something that President Nelson continues to dwell on and teach us about the joy of the eternal journey and how to find joy and happiness, not only in this life, but he always would say this. It's always so sweet to be with him. What's to come is far greater than you can even comprehend. And so we get locked into this earthly life, and every day, every moment, all these college students, I got to go to class. I got to do well on my tests. I got to complete a pass. I got to shoot a basket. That is all really important on our path to eternal joy and happiness if we keep our priorities in the right place.
We will certainly get into your playing days and all things BYU football as this podcast goes on today. But you brought up BYU athletics, and I'm very curious from your perspective as you travel throughout the world, even with your background, for those that may not even know that is part of your background, that you were a player and a legendary quarterback here. What influence have you seen BYU athletics have throughout your travels?
Well, I think there's two answers to that question, because what influence has BYU athletics had on me? I'm taking it this
Sure.
way. And what influence has BYU had on people around the country as we travel around and say, hey, I know your football team.
Right.
I know your basketball team. President Nelson teaches, and he's taught this since he became the prophet, that the gathering of scattered Israel is the single most significant and important thing we can do on the face of the earth, right? And so we all have different areas and different ways we do that. All you have to do is be kind to your neighbor. You have to love the Lord, be kind to your neighbor, the two great commandments. Look for people who need a lift or an arm around them. He says this all the time, anything you do in a positive way to invite others to have a better life is gathering scattered Israel. And so I honestly believe that the athletic department at BYU, this athletic department is the athletic arm of gathering scattered Israel. And that's why we have to be relevant. We have to win. We have to do our very best. And then we have to stand for something. I always loved President Hinckley's book, Stand for Something, because we have to stand for something. We just went through a little situation here at BYU with our quarterback. And, you know, bless his heart, he knew that what happened was not right. And so he took the high road. He said, thank you, Cougar Nation. I don't want to quote him, mm-hmm. but the feeling was, thank you, I didn't live up to what I thought I was, what I right. came here to do. So I'm going to move on, but thank you for my experience at BYU. It was the most incredible experience, and to play in that stadium with all those fans, and now look what he's done. He could have stayed here and served out a 7-game suspension, but he moves on, and now he's the starting quarterback in Tulane, and he is having a lot of success. He'll always look back on his BYU experience as one of the great times of his life, because you just can't get this anywhere. Right. Be in the stadium and feel that. The presentation, just the overall feeling of that. And to me, that is showing the world that you are serious about what you're doing. Okay? So to answer your question, two things. BYU athletics shaped me all my time with Lavelle and all my time here, and really, you know, we kind of got it started with the 1974 team, but then it just took off in 76 and it hasn't stopped. And so that, all those lessons that you learned on a basketball court, I played basketball a couple of years here and then had my football career, that was preparing me for something that I didn't totally understand and recognize, which was more important than that.
Right.
And so it's had a tremendous influence on my life, a tremendous influence on Wendy and our 6 children and 25, almost 26 grandchildren, and trying to build an eternal family. That's our belief. And so personally, it's just been remarkable, especially growing up here in Provo and always being around the athletic program and being raised right here at the foot of the mountains. And then as I go around and I go, oh, that BYU, did you see BYU play? Did you see what they did? Did you see this? Did you see this? Did you see this? Did you see the crowd? Did you see how that stadium was rocking? You know, it's like the influence yeah. is powerful. And that's why we have to be good. We have to be in the conversation every weekend. What are we going to do with BYU? We really don't care, you know, in the grand scheme.
Sure.
Well, we do care.
Yeah.
But we don't care. You know what I'm saying? It's not the top priority for us. I mean, look at Kalani. He's developing young men. Look at Kevin Young, developing young men. Look at Diljit. Look at all of our volleyball coaches, the soccer. They're developing leaders for the most important time in the history of the world. And so when President Nelson says that Jesus Christ is going to perform some of his greatest work between now and when he comes again, wow, every time he says that, I go, what's going to happen? And who's going to be the leader? Who are going to be the leaders? I think a lot of them are going to be BYU athletes who have gone through this athletic program, because you can't learn more important lessons than being out on the field and getting smacked upside the head and then having to get back up.
Right.
And throwing an interception and everybody going, oh, what did you do that for? And then you throw a touchdown pass. Oh, I like that. You know, it's like you have to learn lessons, and we do it differently. But this athletic program is a great proving ground for future leadership in the home, in the community, and in the world.
We'll have more with Elder Nielsen coming up after the break. You're listening to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio.
If you love Deep Blue, you'll want to check out Her Why, the podcast that's all BYU women's sports all the time. Hosted by Lauren McLean, Her Why goes beyond the scoreboard to share powerful stories of faith, courage, and hope from Cougar athletes and coaches. So check out Her Why wherever you find podcasts.
Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast here on BYU Radio. I'm your host, Jason Shepherd. So happy to have our guest today. He is former BYU quarterback and emeritus general authority for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, S. Gifford Nielsen.
I was reminded of something when you were talking about that, because you talk about BYU's need to be relevant, and it's twofold. You need to be relevant because what you're doing in athletics, you want to play at the highest level that you possibly can, but the more relevant you are, the more eyeballs you have on you, and then what do you do when you have all of these eyes on you? And I'm reminded of, you mentioned Kalani and his ability to teach and bring people together. You know, he's always talking about loving one another. And I know that was a team motto a couple of years ago. And everybody on the team talks about loving one another and having love for your teammates. I'm reminded of, and I think it was now 2 years ago, it was at Media Day, Big 12 Football Media Day in Vegas at Allegiant Stadium. And I memory serves, it was the first year that the most recent teams came in, which included Colorado. And we were lucky enough, speaking of the BYU Sports Nation crew, to have Deion Sanders come to the set and do a 12-minute interview. He could not have been more complimentary of Kalani Sitake and what he said. I'll never forget this. He said, we had coaches meetings a couple of days ago, and I was sitting next to your coach, and I can't tell you why, but there was just a spirit about him. He had this special spirit, and that has stuck with me for these last 2 years, that people can sense those types of things when it's in your heart. And so what we do when we have the eyeballs on us is so important.
Well, you bring up that, but look at the foundation that was set before he met Kalani.
Right.
Tom.
Yep.
Tom Homo as a teammate. I mean, and Ronnie Lott. I mean, when those guys were all together and playing against each other, there was a definite spirit of brotherhood. And they felt it with Tom. And they felt it with others on Steve, all those guys on the 49ers team, and the things that happened in Dallas with some of our players that have gone to Dallas. Todd Christensen was an unbelievable missionary. Mark Wilson was an unbelievable missionary. And so, I shouldn't start saying those names, but those are guys that I was around. But we have the Kafusis, all those Kafusi brothers, legendary stories. I'm in Green Bay one time and I'm doing a state conference, and one guy came up to me and he said, I was taught the gospel by one of the Kafusis. that was there. No, it was one, it was a player. And he just got baptized. And so they brought him to me, and I'm thinking, good job.
It was Bronson.
It was Bronson.
Yeah, it was Bronson, yes.
It was Bronson. And then the little missionary was my niece, was a grandniece that taught him. And she was only about this tall. She was just an amazing, but you just, she had the light in her eyes, and she taught him the gospel. And so, I mean, you just start putting the puzzle pieces together. And if I got that story messed up a little bit, I'm so sorry, but I'm just kind of recalling right. that we all have a part to play. And a lot of times with Dion, did you notice what he talked about before the bowl game last year?
Right.
It was all respect, mm-hmm. calm, just, I love BYU. I love what they stand for. He's a man of God.
Yep.
And, you know, he's Dion Sanders, one of the greatest athletes in our time. But he has such respect for everything that we do here and so much respect for Kalani. And Kalani deserves that because he is, and Jay Hill and Aaron Roderick and the rest of the coaches and what Kevin Young is doing right now and the rest of his coaches. And you just keep going down the list of all of our coaches. That's why we're here. We're here to be relevant. We're here to win national championships. We're trying really hard to be the very best that we possibly can be. And Jason, this is kind of interesting because I went to practice right before the season opener, and Kalani had me say something to the team, and it was enjoyable. And I was thinking, okay, quickly, what am I going to say? I thought, 50 years ago, I told him. 50 years ago, Lavelle and I sat in his office saying, what's going to happen with this program? This was in 1975. And we started to elevate this program. Like we said, the 74 team was amazing. And Gary and all those, all the people that played on that team, amazing. But in 76, that's when it really got cranked up. And it has not stopped. And I was telling the team this. 50 years ago, we had the vision of what we're seeing today. So all of you, look at me. Look at me, coach, all you players and coaches. 50 years ago, we had this vision that we would be this good. Now you have a story to write because every season there is a story written and you got a young quarterback, real freshman quarterback.
Yep.
What story are you going to write? And is it going to be a bestseller? And I told him, I said, I believe this is going to be a bestseller.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You gave two general conference talks as a general authority, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I'm very curious, what inspiration and process do you go through before you give a talk? What is the process? Are you given an idea, or is it all about the Spirit and you let the Spirit tell you what needs to be said?
Well, you get a letter that says the First Presidency would like you to speak in the second session of General Conference and speak for 9 minutes. Will you accept this assignment? Well, you can't say no. And so, of course, you're going to accept the assignment. And then, Jason, this is very interesting because you then let revelation flow. I was unique, and in both of those General Conference talks, I talked about there were portions of it talking about football because there are a lot of people out there that care about football. Not everybody, but you know, President Uchtdorf, he was always talking about airplanes, and most people like airplanes. Some don't. You're never going to hit everything, but you let the Lord do His work, and you let the Spirit take over. And people ask me all the time, "What's it like to walk up there and give that talk?" And I tell them, you know, it can be a little bit nerve-wracking, and I'm in the television business. I was in the television business for 25 years, so I know I'm familiar with a microphone and familiar with standing in front of people and things like that. But the bottom line is you put together a talk that you know you didn't do by yourself, and inspiration comes at different times. And in some of those cases with those two talks, inspiration came at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. And you get up and you just write a few thoughts, and then you go to sleep, and then you get up and go, oh, okay. And then you start to put it together, and you start to put it together, and it just kind of comes together for you. And then you know when you go to the podium, you're not giving your talk. You're giving what the Lord wants you to give to the world. you're giving what the Spirit has inspired you to give to the world, and you do the very best job you can. First one was pretty interesting because it was in the conference center. Mm-hmm. The second one was pretty weird because it was COVID, and we were in the conference center, and the only people in there were the first presidency, the quorum of the 12, and three other general authorities, one giving the opening prayer, one giving the closing prayer. Oh, no, there it was a member of the young men's organization. And they were only, so there's no audience. You just walk up and you just look at the camera and you got the first right. presidency and the quorum of the 12 behind you, and you give your talk. But it comes from heaven. It comes through the power of the Spirit.
What was more nerve-wracking to prepare for, an elite defense or preparing for a general conference talk?
Both of them are intense. But it wasn't like going up to the line of scrimmage and looking at Mean Joe Green and Jack Lambert with the steel curtain, and L.C. Greenwood and Jack Ham and Mel Blunt. It wasn't quite like that. Or going to the Cowboys and playing against Harvey Martin, Randy White, Jethro Pugh, and Too Tall Jones, and them wanting to end your life. That's what it's like in the NFL.
Those were the days, right?
Charlie Waters and Cliff Harris running around in that and not knowing where Bob Brunig is going to be. So it's just a different level of intensity, but it's so much – both experiences are just precious. You can't get them. How do you even explain what it's like to play against the world champion Dallas Cowboys as a rookie, right. and that's your first start, and you're playing in Texas, and it's like it's the battle for the state of Texas, the Oilers and the Cowboys. And so you're told you got the start, and you go – me? Out of Provo? BYU? I'm starting against the world champion Cowboys? Can I really do this? And you find out, yes, you can. Because that's where your path in life has taken you. And if you believe the way we believe, it's not happenstance. Because if you would have told me growing up in Provo, Utah, that I would have been an NFL quarterback, I would have said, you're crazy. I was a basketball player. And then LaBelle said, we want to throw the ball. Doug Scoville comes in, and here we go. And All-American quarterback drafted by the Houston Oilers. And so path, you prepare to take what path the Lord has in store for you. Sometimes those paths are really hard and challenging, excruciating, right. tough. How do I do this? How do I make it through this? And sometimes they're elevated like it's a, okay, here you go. We never know. But we accept the path, and we do the very best job we can.
There was just too much to cover with Elder Nielsen to be just one episode, so you are in luck. Join us next week to hear part two. Here's a sneak peek of our conversation. How did you react when LaBelle comes up to you and you have that conversation, and he's telling you, hey, maybe you need to go this route instead? What are you thinking at that time?
Well, it was an interesting time. I mean, we could sit here all day and just talk about that time and learn so many lessons from that. But I did learn a lot of lessons. But I prayed about it, thought about it, and the answer was clear, play football. And it surprised me, and it surprised everyone. And guess what, Jason? We started that year in 75, and I was terrible. I was not good. I didn't play the first game. Second game, I think, was Arizona State. I can't remember, but I got into the game at Arizona State, and they just pounded me. I was 4 out of 11 and threw a pass interception and got knocked out of the game. And I thought, I'm going to be moved down to the third string quarterback. And the next week, I was the third string quarterback. And it's kind of interesting how things turn around, because I knew I was supposed to play football. And LaBelle's kind of looking at me like, what are you doing? You are supposed to be my quarterback. What is going on here? And it's interesting, once again, this is like – I got to be careful. Sometimes you have to go through adversity to figure it out, right? So I'm the third string quarterback, and we're playing New Mexico, and we're 0-3, and everybody's calling for LaBelle's head. One of the jokes we always had is we were 0-3, and you were ready to get fired, then you put me in, and now you've got a stadium named after you. We always used to say that, and he goes, well, I took maybe the slowest quarterback in the history of the game and made him an All-American, so I got to be a pretty good coach. Anyway, we always joked about that. But it was the following week, Friday night. We played Friday night against New Mexico. They had the best team, I think, in the conference that year, or one of the best teams in the conference. We were down 14 to nothing in the third quarter, and we were 0-3. And the first, Mark Giles, the starting quarterback, got a hit pointer. He was out. Jeff Duva was the second string quarterback, moved the team up and down the field beautifully. He got to the 20-yard line every time, and something went wrong. So with about 3 minutes left to go in the game, LaVell goes, okay, we're going to try you again. We tried you last week against Arizona State, and that was a failure. We're going to try you again. And then it just was a magical night. Magical night. Set a whack record that night, completing 11 out of 12 passes. And we came back and beat New Mexico. And that started it.
We hear the term. Go ahead.
No, that started. I got to tell you this one. Can I tell you this one story?
Please. Yeah, oh, no, story. Hey, this is for you.
This is how bad it was. So we're in that game. And everybody was expecting me to be the starting quarterback, or I don't know. I don't want to take away anything away from Mark Giles and Jeff Duva, because they were great quarterbacks, really good quarterbacks. But LaVell was hoping that I would come and do this thing. And we got in the game, and I was just failing. And so we're coming down the field. We just scored a touchdown, and Cougar Stadium started to wake up just a little bit because it was dead. Came down the field. We were on the 35-yard line, and Jeff Blank, little fiery running back, I just love that kid, comes in the huddle and he goes, if you'll throw a 70 throwback and just look to the left and then come back to the right, I'm going to be running down the right sideline by myself. I said, how do you know that? This is on the field.
Yeah, he's calling a shot.
He's calling a shot. And I said, I can't change the play. And Jeff Blank looked at me and said, what have you got to lose? What have you got to lose? Okay, I'm changing the play. What have I got to lose?
Right.
So I threw a 70 throwback. I rolled to my left, looked to the left, and then I looked back, and he was all by himself, 35-yard touchdown pass. And he came back and he said, told you.
Did anybody ask you why you changed the play?
Some of the coaches did, but they said, wow, okay. There was a lot of conversation
sure.
about it. And then we kicked the field goal to win the game. And then after that, I was the starting quarterback. So through all that failure, it was terrible. It was hard to go to school. It was hard to live. It was hard. It was just tough. But then it turned. And now it's what it is today.
Yeah. Well, and to what you said a minute ago, sometimes you have to go through adversity to figure it out, but then also to realize how good the good times are.
Yeah.
And you learned that lesson there because, needless to say, you probably were able to enjoy and realize how good things are when they were good.
Right. Yeah. So I had great, deep humility and appreciation. Everybody after the game was jumping around because we won our first game
yeah.
of the year, and everybody was, oh, yeah, yeah. And I'm thinking, wow. What just happened? 11 for 12, two touchdown passes. We came back and now we're going. What just happened? And my heart was full of gratitude for sticking in there. And my dad just kept saying, stay in there, be the first one on the field, last one off. Just keep working. I don't even know if you're ever going to play again, but just keep working and see if your time comes. And the time came.
Right.
And now, you know, what happened, with LaVell and how we got Doug Scoville in here, and mm-hmm. that changed everything.
Thanks for tuning into Deep Blue. Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can find all episodes of Deep Blue anywhere you get your podcasts and on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.